meditation. I have prepared myself to guide you into a very nice meditative experience. But I believe our host wants to first of all introduce the matter, so I just greet all of you for now.
Thank you very much, Sachin and Swami. So welcome to everyone who is in our webinar series today. As you saw, it was delayed for 1 week for some personal reasons, but we will continue with the regular schedule now for the last three webinars. So I wish all of you a merry, happy new year. I hope everyone is fine and healthy. And today I have the great honor and the great pleasure to introduce Sachinandan Swami to all of you. Many of you may know him already, but for those who don't know Sachinandan Swami so far, I'll just give a few words about his life career with our ECR Institute and also with our company's Time Waver. We are very much connected to Sachinandan Swami for many, many years. He's been giving many speeches and lectures in conferences, and Sachinandan Swami himself is a spiritual mentor and monk for more than 50 years, I guess around 55 years by now, in the Indian Bhakti tradition, the tradition which introduces how to develop love for the Supreme. And he's been spiritual mentor of thousands of people in the whole wide world, giving lectures, giving seminars, retreats, workshops all over the world to bring spiritual knowledge to the hearts of the people. He's been writing, I think, around 10 or 11 books so far, also translated in all major languages on yoga, on meditation, on consciousness, and on also very deep spiritual subjects of the Bhakti tradition. And he, as I said, he's been a speaker for many of our conferences. I know him personally for 30 years about now. So, and he's also been giving me a lot of spiritual counsel throughout my life. So I'm very grateful that he will be our speaker for today. So I will pass on the word to Sachinandan Swami, and I'm very much eager to hear your talk today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this kind introduction, and I'm very, very enthusiastic to join you today. As you know, I spent a lot of time during the last months in India, and must admit to you that I would very much appreciate if you tell us a little bit about the time frame in which we operate. How much time do I have to guide our audience into deeper states of meditation? And,
Usually we take around 1 hour speaking time, and then we have half an hour discussion. If it prolongs a little bit, like 65, 70 minutes, that's also fine. So please take your time. Don't feel that you have to rush through your presentation. Good. We have all in all 1.5 hours.
Good. Good, thank you very much. Good, then let me start. First of all, I affectionately greet all of you on this call. I always feel when we have a call like this, in some ways we feel a community. We sit in a circle, although physically we may sit each one before their computer, but all together we build a circle, and if we can just be conscious of that, I think we will be able to create on this call a very high energy. If we bring our mind to this idea of connectedness, of interconnectedness. Our subject today will be meditation, and I thought to tell you my own history in this. around 53 years or so back, fate brought me on the path of a monk, and I have always included in my life practices like contemplation, chanting mantras, and also meditation, both guided meditations and then object-free meditations, where the mind is totally free from all images and imagining things, but comes back to its original state of calmness and pure awareness. Yes, I've always done these practices, but my own meditation practice took a dramatical shift, I should say, when I had an encounter with a master of meditation in Varanasi. It was about now 20 years back. Oh, I'm not so good with the remembering times. It was longer, 25 years or 27 years back. I had been traveling to Varanasi for a writing project on death. My book's title was "There Is No Death," meaning that there is a part in us that survives the physical death. And I had been interviewing people at the funeral places, at the ghats in Varanasi, where people brought their near and dear ones who had left the body and burned them at the side of Mother Ganga. And one day I had a little writing pause. I went to the fruit market, and as I was walking down the streets, I came to the most busy intersection in Varanasi, and there I had my moment of awakening. What I saw was this impossible and crazy Indian traffic. You know, no one keeps any rules. The only rule is to get to the goal. There were swarms of bicycles, motorcycles, growling. There were cars driving in between elephants and camels. And in the middle of all of this, on a little elevated platform, there was a policeman with a bamboo stick trying to bring order into the chaos. That in itself was not so astonishing. I have been each year for about 2 months in India. I've seen Indian traffic before. But what caught my attention, or my attention, was the yogi who sat on the same raised platform from where the policeman was operating in deep meditation. His body was covered with a suit of the exhaust, and his face looked extremely tranquil. He was absolutely composed. It seemed he was not even aware of the noise and the hectic and stressful traffic that surrounded him. He sat there with a mind as peaceful as a lake on a windstill day, absorbed in the deepest levels of meditation. I thought, Wow. The next day, I was going down to the Ganga. I think I wanted to go back to these ghats where the funerals took place. I saw him again. This time he was in the Ganga, waist deep. He was washing his laundry, and his long dreads were floating in the river. I looked at him, and he looked back, and for a moment our eyes interlocked. And I saw there was a sparkle, a light in his eyes that was truly attractive. So I addressed him. Mere Naam Sachinandan Swami, Mere Desh, Germany. And he responded in perfect English with a British accent. Let us speak in English, young man. As we talked, it became clear that he had been a professor at the university, but then when his wife died, he had gone to the Himalayas to learn yoga and meditation from a master there. And he said, now I'm back in, since 20 years here in Varanasi, and that's where I live. And he pointed me to a boat which was floating on the Ganga. It was bound by a rope to the ghat. There was a little hut on the boat. It was a houseboat. I said, you live here? Do you live there? That's an ideal place for meditation. And he said, yes, it is. I do my meditations here. Then I said, not yesterday. I saw you at the intersection, you know, where you were surrounded by all this traffic. And he said, oh, still remember. See, from time to time, I go to a place which is not peaceful. I go in the midst of the hectic, the stress. Because if I can be peaceful and in an inner stillness, even there, even then, when everything is chaotic around me, then this means I'm doing something right. And with this, he showed us the real point of meditation. Meditation prepares you to remain composed, tranquil, inspired and inspiring, even when everything around you is in turmoil. The test whether your spiritual practice works is described in ancient scriptures. It says, even when you can remain unshaken, even in the midst of circumstances that are fearful and frightful, then you are truly fixed in transcendence. This is an old language. What it means in modern language is when you can remain undisturbed, even when there is cause for disturbance, then your spiritual practice has really anchored you. Then it really works. So, yeah, that yogi was showing me what this meant, and I was very impressed, and I decided to take my own meditation practice to the next level and to the next levels. I have been increasing my own meditation in terms of quantity and also depth since that time. I have given many retreats all over the world. Yes, I'm publishing about this subject matter. And I'm always intrigued by this yogi whom I only met once, but who had brought a great, great treasure to my awareness, that meditation can bring you to a place where you're undisturbed, even in the face of many disturbing elements. Good. I'm now want to dive right into my subject for today. I would like to give you a practice that I feel is very, very important and very practical. In the Yoga Sutras, there is one quality which is mentioned. It is santosh, contentment. And we will make today a contentment meditation. But before I do this, before I guide you into this, I would like to highlight a little bit for you what contentment means. Contentment is something that is running within our hearts or our soul, much like an underground current, an underground river. It's not visible to the naked eye, but if you dig a little deep, you will come in contact with this underground current of contentment. Contentment is always with us, even when you are not happy with your life, even if you are sick, even if you are, let us say, so to say, on one level, disturbed. If you know the art of digging, you will be able to access that river of contentment that is always with you, always, at each place, each time, and each circumstances in life. There is something within you which we can call santosh in Sanskrit, or the contentment that is always there. See, happiness is dependent on external circumstances. When the causes for happiness are there, like perhaps a good meal, a warm room in the winter, a good relationship, then you're happy. But when the cause of happiness is removed and there is nothing to eat, your house is cold, and the relationship in which you live is has its difficulty, and you seem to not be able to communicate nicely any longer. Still, contentment, or this quality of being satisfied deep within you, is always there. Because contentment is a quality that is ultimately spiritual. It is not influenced or affected in any way by the external circumstances. But a disturbed mind, an agitated mind, or a upset mind will find it difficult to access that underlying feeling of contentment. And therefore, meditation is something like an entryway that helps you to go deeper than the ups and downs of your mind. You call it in Sanskrit sukha dukkha, the play of the waves of happiness and distress. Meditation is the entryway which helps you to go deeper and access that undisturbed place within you. Are you all with me so far? Can you understand what I'm saying? Good, I see people nodding their heads. Good. Then I would like to bring you now to this deeper place within you, the place of contentment, and so on. I will make some meditational music here. I will ask our host to see. I hope it's not too loud. Good. Higher. Good. Fine.
This sounds good.
Sounds good.
Yeah, good. This is good.
Fine. Fine. So, I'm seeing here with me Susanna. Hello. Leon Ren. Hello. Tatjana Cherbakova. I see you in the window. Hans-Werner Quast, our gracious host. More I can't see on my screen. The rest of you are somewhere in the field which only the time waver can define. Fine. I request you to find a good and comfortable sitting position. Good. Please look a little bit around in your room, because soon I will ask you to close your eyes, and then you have a more safe feeling when you have seen everything. Take on a very erect and stable sitting position. Perhaps you may roll back your shoulders. Try to sit in a straight, we will do now a simple centering or anchoring practice. Please bring your awareness to your feet and feel the aliveness in your feet. Move up in your awareness or attention to your knees and then to your sitting bones. Try to feel where you're sitting, and then relax. Move your attention up your lower spine, upper spine, and relax. Relax your belly and your chest. And bring your attention to your shoulders. Your upper and lower arms. The palms in your hand. It's nice if you have your hands in an open position, that means palms facing upwards. And relax from the shoulders down to your hands. Relax. Now move to the back of your neck, the back and the top of your head, and relax. Now your forehead, the eyes, the cheeks, and the mouth. Relax. Appreciate how you're fully relaxed from the top of your head down to your spine, your sitting bones, and your feet. Relaxed and alert. Fully present. Body is relaxed and attention is very sharp. Do a few inhales, inhales and exhales. Try to have deep inhalations and deep and complete exhalations. Let us do this for about 7 times, 8 times, deep in and exhalations. As you in and exhale, try to not force it, just do it gently and slow down. Lengthen your in and exhalations. Okay, I leave you doing this. Thank you. there's really no need to alter or change anything in your breathing. Let it come naturally now. It's now time for you. The 2 more deep breaths. Next, gently draw your awareness to your heart. Breathe in and out through your heart, slowly and gently. With each inhalation, feel new energy filling you. With each exhalation, let go a little bit more and relax a little bit deeper. As you breathe in and out, see how your mind settles in, becomes a little bit more peaceful. Sense the calmness within you. Now bring back to memory or a situation from the past where you obtained something of great value. Perhaps it was a relationship that was really important to you. Alone time in nature. Or some meaningful gift. Let the image of what made you fulfilled rise in your heart. Stay with the image and the sense of wholeness pervading your inner space. Tap into the sense of completeness or happiness or satisfaction where you really did not feel any want, you didn't miss anything. Open to these emotions and let them expand in you. Something of value, or situation, or relationship that at the time made you feel content? Hold on to the sense of fulfillment, and then go deeper still. Try to sense the contentment that lies beneath, that underlies this feeling, perhaps like an underground current. Give it space in your heart and let now this contentment fill your awareness. I am good enough. Everything is okay the way it is. I have been blessed with this most valuable gift in my life. I'm satisfied with what I already have. Absorb the experience of contentment. Let it pervade your being and thoughts. Then let it sink into each cell of your body. Let it shine in all directions. Wrap yourself in this underlying state, untouched by the coming and going of happiness and distress. Know that you can return to the inherent subtle state of contentment whenever you have a need to reconnect with a sense of wholeness, when really nothing is missing. Let us stay a little bit longer in that state. When you are ready, take a few deep breaths. Move your head and neck slightly, side to side. Slowly open your eyes. When you are ready, return to room awareness. I suggest that we all chant a little mantra. I will chant it one time alone, and all of us can chant it together three times. So one time alone. Yes, everyone. I do hope that was useful for you. I think as long as people have not been able to find out that place inside, the place where they will find the soul, the real self, eternity, or just beingness, there will be always something in the outer world that will irritate and perhaps disturb them. But once we are able to make that inner journey to that place of inner perfection, then we will be contentment, then we will experience contentment, and there are good news. When you change inside, very often the circumstances around you will follow and also change. But if you just work on the circumstances and improve them in some ways, you might still confront that old ghost inside. That ghost inside which tells you, you're not enough, this is not enough, this is not good. There is a disturbance here. Oh, this doesn't work. So this contacting this contentment is very good practice. Fine. Let me look a little bit at the time, my timepiece here. Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, in good time. Let me see. I see the. Since Cynthia Wilson has written, thank you, thank you. I can only read this much. Who is there? Who has joined us? More people. I will ask my technical assistants here if they can help us. Skor Krishna. I want to see all of you on the gallery. Valentina, oh yeah. Bob Cohen, really? fantastic, Brahma Tirtha Prabhu. Robert Sean is with us. Eugenia Belden, hello. Claudia, yes, here I see. I saw Bob Cohen, who is a director of an international institute that combines the findings of modern science with the ancient wisdom of spiritual traditions. I saw you in India and you gave pleasure to our hearts there. Fine. Then is Roman Ricken. Yes, I think I mentioned you. Tatiana, I've mentioned you already. Aurora. This means like the rising sun. Jörg is here with us. Jörg Bonitz. Hello, Jörg. And there are two cats. Selina Lai. Good. Margaret is with us. Claire Young. Imrich. Beat Wiederkehr. That's a German name. Christiane Mais. Tannis. And so many others. Fantastic, fantastic. It's so nice to see AB, Nina, Selina, Ciao, Ordination, Grafner Wolfgang. I do believe I know Fabian Lopez, Nigeria, Petra, Eva, Irena, Nupo, Jerry, Coco Lee. Ying Biang, what a wonderful name. Ronja Kraus, Kremer, Stefan Benes, and so many others. It's a real honor for me to be with you. Please try to take the essence of this. You might have to do it a few times. I think this is recorded, so you can learn the steps. I always recommend people to write a compilation of the points in the form of bullet points, and then they can do this in their own time. It's good to not abbreviate the steps too much. The breathing is necessary, the anchoring of our consciousness, or withdrawal of our consciousness from everything else and anchoring it in the various parts of the body. It serves to bring our mind back. And after some time, you will see, this is how it is with me, that just as you sit down and you do the initial steps, the mind comes back, the consciousness comes back, and you are at a place from where it is very easy for you to access these deeper states within you. The Upanishads say that there is a place within us that is always waiting for us to be discovered, but most people just run by it. And therefore, the Upanishads tell us, stop, stop, stop. Where are you running? If you keep on running like this, you might miss everything you are looking for. Peace, eternity, deep satisfaction. You might be missing it if you keep on looking outside of you and don't go inwards. So these are this one type of meditation. Yes, I want to now see if any of you have some questions, some contribution. Let us interact a little bit so that we bring some life into this call. Up till now, I have been more or less talking, not more or less, I have been talking on my own. Only our Hans Werner has also introduced us. But let us see if there is any question you would like to ask me, and I will definitely try to answer it. Hans Werner, I think you know how to navigate this, isn't it?
Yeah, usually Mikkel is the one who can also unmute and mute the speakers. But everyone else is allowed to unmute himself and ask any questions. So maybe you can raise your hand before, or any, if you have spontaneously an idea what you would like to ask Sachinanda Swami, please just go ahead.
I see there's something by Eugenia, but can you read it? It must, I think it's in the chat. Yeah. I can't see the chat here. I'm unfortunately a Neanderthal man when it comes to computer.
But I will read to all of you.
Yeah.
Do you believe that if one person, when they able to touch their inner soul, this place in the heart and mind connected with love and contentment, within silence and the connection with the universe and nature, we can share this energy, love with others, so awareness will pass from one to other directly, like you, Swamiji, or to others?
Yes, this is a very good question. And I would like to answer it from my own experience, and then I will go give the theoretical background for this. See, I have been answered. I have been asked consistently to help people by praying for them, by meditating for them, by sending them good thoughts and so on. And when I was a young monk, I didn't do so. I didn't, know how to do it. I tried my best, but later when these requests became so consistent, when I was consistently asked to do this, I needed to go a little bit into the details and the science of it. And this is what I found out. You can send positive energy to others and they will heal from it. But there must be two things in you. You must have a good intention, intentionality must be there, and your mind should be free at that time from any selfish concerns. So when you have this intentionality and freedom from selfish concerns, then your good prayers or your good intentions or your healing will go to them, to the other people. I have personally seen people coming to me in situations where the child didn't come out of the womb or they had cancer, really dramatical circumstances. And I have then sat down. I have created something like I always create like a healing circle. That what this means is I put the person and his situation, also the situation he looks for help, you know, that where there's a problem here. And on one place, let us say here, then I put the desired outcome here, and then I'm also there as a third person, and there is in this way a triangle or circle. The person with his problem, the desired outcome, let me see, like here, and myself, the one who prays here, and then in this conscious space, so to say, there is a real conscious energy going on, healing can take place. I've seen this. Yes, you...
Yes.
You only must be very careful that you yourself are really there. Let the real you be there. That the person is really there in as much detail. The situation is there in much detail, and the desired outcome Oops, I'm getting mixed up with my hands there, and then it works. Yes.
There's another question, Sachinathan. By Selina. Swamiji, do you think bhakti is the shortcut for rewiring our brain to connect with the divine consciousness?
Yes, also the ancient wisdom scriptures like Bhagavatam tell this, because why this is so, bhakti is the yoga of love. And love is perhaps the most intense, the most and the most intense feeling, but also that feeling which is most motivating. I want to give you a classical overview of the classical yoga system. There's Karma Yoga, there's Jnana Yoga, there's Ashtanga Yoga, and there's Bhakti Yoga. And it is said, with Bhakti, all these other yogas get life. Karma Yoga means by my own efforts, by my conscious and very well-informed activity, I can come to the next level. So when you have love, you make an effort. When you have love for someone, the love informs you what is the right effort, and so on. Then there's Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is based on the understanding, let me analyze the situation and let me detach myself from all attachments that distract my clear perception. Love is such a force that can also help you to detach yourself from all others, other concerns. I know when you love someone, you drop the things which the other person do not like. For instance, if the other person doesn't like your smoking habit, then you will drop it when there is real love. You will have the strength to analyze. This is not good. This is not... And in Ashtanga Yoga, in the classical Hatha Yoga system, after going through the asanas, the breathing exercises, the intense focus and the withdrawal from everything else, you want to see in this yoga system the divinity in the heart. You want to detect or discover that divine super soul, which is there next to the soul within the heart. So in bhakti helps you, or the yoga of love helps you also to see that. The eyes of love, bhakti gives you the eyes to act, bhakti gives you the eyes to understand, and bhakti gives you the eyes to go deep inside and see the indwelling Lord of the heart. Therefore, the bhakti is extolled in scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam as the highest yoga path, because it includes the other yoga paths. It is very inclusive. In the yoga of love, or in the yoga of bhakti, you also act. You also try to understand. You also go inside in the meditative practice. And the main, let us say, driving force which helps you to act, to analyze, to detach from the world, to go inside, that is divine love. It's something else than the love which we feel in this world. It is more potent. It's an energy called the Bhakti Shakti. Yes, I hope this was clear. You know, it's not always easy when you have when you read so much, or when you are so deep in the tradition, it's not always easy to find words that reach people outside. But I'm giving my best.
Selina asked also one further question. Can one just attain higher consciousness simply by bhajan or dance?
Yes, if you do it properly, then you can receive dancing. Oh, dancing not for selfish purposes, that let people look at me and see me, is often chosen by great philosophers as the highest art. I know that Socrates used to be seen dancing alone on the fields, and so was our German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. He loved to dance, and also great saints like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in India would dance. In this divine dance, there are three elements. Please take note now. There's obviously the melody. There is the rhythm. But all this melody and rhythm and your dancing movement is held together by a third item that is often overlooked. This third item is called in Sanskrit bhava, or a deep mood of love and ecstasy. And when that is there, your dance is very good. The same with all your other spiritual practices like bhajan. If that deep mood of bhava is there, then it's very good. But if it is without that deep mood, that deep feelings of divine being moved inside, boom, then everything can become just an external farce. But thank you. What wonderful questions we are getting today. My God.
May I ask also one question?
Of course.
Thank you. It's about the, maybe you might like to elaborate on the different objects of meditation and the goal of meditation. In India, we especially find these different schools, especially of the Bhakti tradition and then of the impersonalistic tradition, where they try to meditate on the light, on the nothingness, whatever this may be. So would you like to elaborate a little bit on the different paths and goals of meditation and what you would suggest is actually the more effective one? If this is not too persuasive.
It's very important to understand that spiritual life is always a highly personal thing, and also is something that grows over time. So it's very difficult to give one path for everyone, or one shoe fits all. Or one size, shoe size fits all, because everyone is on different levels of development. Therefore, you find any genuine wisdom text, they address different people on their individual level of development. So I can best explain it in a very simple way. I was asked to write a book on meditation, which I have finished now. And I really thought, if I only write about one type of meditation, I will not do justice to all the people on their various levels of of development. I have to address people on different developments and take them from there to what could be helpful. So I came up with, after studying the scriptures and my own experience, with three types of meditations. The first is a simple turning within and accessing the stillness inside. I feel that is something that is very important for the modern person. You cannot, you first have to teach them that there's something within them and they have to contact this. I see this especially, I'm invited to members of different spiritual communities, and I often find out that these people are still very much on the surface, where they hold fast to a certain belief system, but this is all in the mind. It is not realized, and they begin to quarrel with other people who have another belief system. Real spirituality is absolutely different from that. It's not about mental concepts and belief systems. It is therefore different from religions. Real spiritual life is about transformation. It's about discovering what lies within us. So the first step are simple meditations to which help people to turn within and discover what is inside. See, most of the people are so much outwardly facing. They are spending their energy, their mind, and their time in things which are absolutely outside of them. And they become afraid if you ask them to sit down because then they get bored or they get anxieties. If you can't sit with yourself for one hour alone in a room, that means you are in very, very bad company with yourself. No? So the first thing is to make them to turn within and learn to make the mind your friend. This is turning within. Then come the next level. The next level is concerned with understanding the true self, the identity beyond the masks and roles which we play in this world. The real identity, not the adopted identity. And the third level meditation, they are meditations in which I am very much at home, or try to be at home. It's when you go to the, let me say it, to the more than human level, the divine level. What might that be? Well, it's about the soul, about eternity, and about God. But if you have done, let us say, if you have not done the first two things, then all this will be just mental concepts. So you must learn to first turn within, to discover your true self, which is unaffected in, if I would say, like to say it, in a language which we both of us communicate. You need to understand that you are not the body and the mind, but not theoretically, practically. And then from there, your spiritual realizations will be real and not imaginative. So yes, these are three categories which are there in the meditative field. And for everyone, the best meditation is the meditation they can do, they like to do, the meditation which brings them further. And that may differ from one person to another. I hope this has answered your question to some degree of satisfaction. So
yes, to some degree.
I'm not the one who gives you a one size fits all feat. I have seen that that is a mistake.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't actually also ask for like this one size fits all type of answer, but as you also said that there is different levels of development, that implies to a certain degree that there must be an ultimate goal. That's probably rather my question. So maybe how can you, and you were answering how one can lead people to different development stages. So would you agree with that?
Once one monk was asked, is there an ultimate goal? And he said, he was from the Bhakti tradition, yes, to get lost in love. That is the ultimate goal. It means to lose your wrong concept of self and to enter a relationship with the divinity that is characterized with ecstatic love.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm fully satisfied. Thank you.
There may be another one.
I have a question.
Yes, Claudia.
Can you go deeper with, because I think myself is my goal, no? It's because that's the point when I'm going to get the real vocation of me, no? Not things that I'm doing every single day for sustain my house and my things. So when I go deeper with consciousness, it's because the goal is me. So you said myself, I have to change myself, but I am. Can you go deeper with that, please?
Yeah. What a nice perspective you have. Yes, it is described when consciousness looks outside through the eyes, when the consciousness hears through the ears, it will always get to understand these outside things, but not itself. The consciousness has to turn around on the seat of the heart and look at itself. What will it see when it is seeing itself? That is the beginning of meditation. See, we are sitting, the consciousness, according to the yoga traditions, sits on the seat of the heart and looks outside through the eyes and hears or perceives through the ears and all the senses. But in yoga, the consciousness turns around on the seat. I won't turn around completely because then you won't hear me any longer. On the seat of the heart, and that will look inside. And then it can see the things that lie inside. When I was in Mauritius, I was invited, after I had done my lectures and all the heavy work which Swamis have to do, for a snorkeling tour. And I had never snorkeled. So I put on these glasses, I had something to breathe, and I was swimming in the ocean. And I could see through the glasses a whole underwater world, which I was not aware of. Yes, I had seen some documentary here and there, but I had also forgotten. But now I was there. And the fishes were coming at me, staring at me. I saw corals, I saw rifts, I saw a whole world. It's a really wonderful experience of which I was not aware. And this happens when the consciousness turns around and looks into these areas which are absolutely new. The areas inside and really it requires repetitive doing it. You have to repeat it. You have to do it again and again and again. Only then you will actually be able to make sense of all of what you see, and you become an expert. Yes, and there you will definitely see first inner stillness and peace and calmness. You will find out, oh, I was thinking I have to do this and that to be validated by others. Oh, I was always feeling I was compelled to act in this way and to finish this project, and so on. But you begin to see, that's not me. that's not my story. That's a story from that was imposed upon me from outside. Yes, and then as you see, as you look, you will be able to understand the self and become fearless. Fearless even in the face of death, because you will understand only my body will be left behind. It's almost like shedding an old garment that is no longer working so well and entering and leaving it behind. You're not fazed, you're not disturbed by it. I had to practice this yesterday. Our heating system broke down and we had here -8 degrees and it was so cold. And cold is the one thing which is very difficult for me. You see, I'm still quite the heating came back, but it will take a little time before the house is warm again. Oh, I'm still quite warm. And I was thinking to myself, Satchinandan Swami, now is the time to walk your talk, to connect to that inner place within you, which is not affected by the outside world. And I must say, it worked very well. I did everything. I did my meditations in the cold, in the minus degrees, and so on. But I must admit to you, I was happy when today the heat started to come back a little bit. In bhakti, or in spiritual life, you need to be able to tolerate, but that doesn't mean you have to, you will become enlightened in intolerable circumstances. Like this. Claudia, your question was so deep that I'm not sure if I really caught everything. Is it okay what you heard me saying, or would you like me to say something more to a side question? Please say.
I really love your answer, because I'm experiencing in this moment my real vocation. Do you understand what I'm saying? And it's because exactly that I go and see myself, and I don't need not to like anybody else. I don't need a comments of somebody outside. It's just me inside with me. And then I will understand that I'm in the right path. You know, it's something good. Really strange that is happening to me these days.
By the way, Claudia, I'm so grateful that you spoke again and told us, told everyone about your personal life circumstances. I'm careful to make predictions about the future, because it said if you want to make God laugh at you, tell him your prophecies. he has his own plan, which is unscrutinized, which we can't understand so easily. But everything points to one direction. That is that we really have to change our paradigms, and we have to come to a level where we are real. I think all the falsities in the world will become more and more exposed, and that will be very difficult. The economic systems will already, we can feel, at least in Germany, they were based on false arrangements, so to say. Let us not make our mouth too full here with things which I don't understand so well, because I don't study them. In relationships, more and more the quality is people want to know, who are you really? Let the real you speak to me, and then we will see, and so on. It's now the time to become real. By the way, it's always the time to become real, but now more than ever there is a need for that. Good, everyone. We have a little bit more time. Let's see, we want to take this time. I think there is another question from Eugenia. Yes.
Yeah. It's I try to read it. It's the English is not perfect, so I don't know if it's a question or it's a comment. I try to read. So besides sciences, frequencies, psychology, technology, the support underlined in Time Waver is helped by spiritual support such as this Bhakti philosophy or otherwise, so people can reach enlightenment. So this is meant as a question.
Yes, I spoke to Marco Schmicke, whom you, I think, all know about this question, and also to Christian, and both of them told me that they wish to add one dimension. They call it, I think, it's more in Healy, Healy Horizon, they call it in Healy, but in Time Waver it's also there. Different people like they want to give also wisdom teachings in addition to frequencies, to the numerical measurements in science, and so on. They feel the wisdom, collected wisdom of the world, and also the bhakti wisdom would be very helpful to support you. Because, you know, when you're a Time Waver doctor, or when you're a doctor who uses Time Waver, which is really a very, very advanced system of diagnosis and of healing, then it's always you who sits there as the ultimate deciding personality. And as one monk, I think, said it, wherever you go, that's where you are. In other words, an immature person, even if he goes and has a very sophisticated system with which he works, he will have to, he is ultimately thrown back to himself. So he must work on himself. And therefore, the wisdom traditions with and bhakti and all this is really good, because it aims at uplifting the doctor or the person who works with Time Waver to the next level of consciousness and of insights and of the ability to utilize these technologies. See, let me give you an analogy. nowadays there is a lot of development in the artificial intelligence field. And some people are shocked about this. I personally think we should not be shocked about artificial intelligence. We should be shocked about the people who use it. If they are good people, they will use this tool very nicely. If they're bad people, then they will have more powerful knives in their hands to do harm than they ever had before. And unfortunately, there is not much, let me say, that is done to elevate the consciousness of the people. Perhaps there's also not so much which can be done, because it's an individual decision of everyone to improve their lives. But I think for those who are time waver, people who use the time waver, it's very good that they don't only think about downloading more apps and more advanced things. It's also important that they improve their personalities and so on. It, or at least it will support them tremendously in their work. It will help them. It will come as a real great how do you say? Yes, support. I said it already. So yes, and I'm very happy that there are forums like this within Time Waver, where responsible people come together and form this circle and meditate together, talk together, inspire each other, and so on. It is very good. It helps us to grow, or at least to smile. Fine. So I think I'm very satisfied. I will now work a little bit more on my meditational book, if this is all right.
There is no further questions so far in the chat.
There is one, Sally Kanna. Sally Kanna, the hand is up, I see. Is it?
Oh, okay, I couldn't see that. It's on the next page. Okay, so then please speak.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Swamiji, this is wonderful. Thank you so much for your presence here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well.
I had a question when you were talking about bhakti and meditation. It seems to me that there's a point where, and I'm not saying there isn't a transcendent reality, but it seems that at some point you realize that what you are seeking is yourself. I don't know if that's consistent with what you've learned, but that's what seems to me. And sometimes at a certain point, I think it's you become fearful when you realize that. But then you pass through that. Does that seem right to you?
That's absolutely right. That's also what I have learned when I met my own spiritual teacher just months before he left his body, before he died. He had asked me, "So have you understood the path?" And you know, when your own master asked you, you are not confident to say yes, I understand everything in fullness. It's just not. At least it was not my reactions. He said, first of all, then I obviously tried to give some answers, but they were not fully satisfying. He said, first of all, you have to understand who you are. That was profound. When you hear that from a person who has already stepped with his foot on the other side of life, no? But he said, first of all, and that's also what that means, something else follows after this. This is what has always been also my experience. Yes, if you do not have a clear understanding of who you are on your various levels, there are various levels. The one part in us is a human being who has a very real psychological makeup. So we need to understand that. We need to understand how we function, because then only we can understand how we react. And yes, so, and finally, the understanding who you are is going to the depths of who you are as an spiritual being. So that is how you start your spiritual path. And then there are more realizations which come after that. But first of all, that is the starting point. And I don't think it is wise to always speak about the highest goals and the highest levels of spiritual understanding. I think it is sometimes more helpful to speak about the way that brings us there. So first of all, that has to be understood. And as you said, it can be scary. It can be scary, but as you are willing to go through this, you will see auspiciousness in all directions. There's a wisdom story about how it can be so scary to look down into the well and see the mirrored image of your face down there and what it all includes. But if you're willing to see it, you will see how in the essence, really, when all the masks are taken away, there is a very, very joyful, blissful, loving being inside. Good. Thank you. What a wonderful, may I know, yes, Sally Kana. It's Sally is the first name and Kana is the second name most probably, is it?
Yes. My husband was from India.
Achha.
And so I'm very connected to a lot of Vedic thought. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've been so uplifted by Marcus's work and yes. The work of all you people, because it's purer than a lot of the other things I've seen, because you know the intentions are there, and it's just wonderful.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you so much. Okay, then I give the word back to our very talented and sympathetic host. Yes, Hans Werner, please.
I would love to thank you, Sachinanda Swami,